Good evening, Seattle. Good evening to all my friends traveling through space. Good evening to the Bigfoot that are currently sharpening their knives in the Cascade Mountains preparing to attack. Good evening to the gamblers and the wastrels, the honky-tonk kings. Good evening to the kings and queens of the streets, the people eating the rat and the skunk. It is November the 9th, 2020. Can you believe it? November the 9th, 2020, right around 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Yes, indeed, and it's your good friend Dan. How you liking this election? Is it feeling as crazy as you expected it to be? Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen next. I still stick with the idea of 50-50 chance. 50% chance you're going to get a statesman-like speech. And why do I say this? Because I remember too many photos of Trump and Obama and Bushes and all these motherfuckers drinking wine and whiskey 20 years ago. I remember too much of this cross-contamination bullshit. So that's why. That's why I say flip a coin. We're either heading towards some type of really crazy period of civil conflict, or sometime in the next 7 to 10 days, there's going to be a statesman-like speech. Now, I will tell you this. All of the legal maneuvering, all of the statements by judges and legal experts, whatchamacallit experts, whatever, all of that's part of the drama too. That's all part of the narrative building. You have to show like you fought the good fight. No one's going to believe you if you just go up and quit. You got to fight the good fight, Trump. That's right. Trump must demonstrate that he fought to the end, which will probably be 3 to 4 days from now. That, I think, is a good explanation for a lot of the, well, he's going to, you know, file a lawsuit in Vegas and file a lawsuit in Michigan. I don't know, guys. I feel like I've seen this movie 50 times, you know, or 100 times. I feel like I've seen this movie too many times, and it's getting fucking boring. Other than the most crooked people that ever lived, nobody really wins these elections. The only people that win are the people that are basically controlling them. The rest of us are schmucks. That's the truth. Yeah, you know, I think back to the 1970s sometimes, when my mom first bought Velveeta. I think back to the 1970s when my mom, at least I recognize seeing my mom, use a credit card. That was supposed to free us, right? Having that credit card handy, MasterCard, I'm bored. MasterCard, I'm bored, I want some Velveeta. Some Velveeta MasterCard, please. In the notes for tonight's podcast, there is a link to a YouTube video that mashes up Tom Waits' song, you know, the God's Away on Business song with the Cookie Monster. I'm not going to talk you through it. I just recommend watching it because it really does capture my feelings right now. I had a weird idea about rapidly curing, and that's C-U-R-I-N-G, curing, a method by which you dry something. You dry and prepare it. Sometimes it's called curing, but rapidly curing, you know, marijuana, because you can't just grab some, you know, brand new weed out of the field and smoke it. Believe me, I've tried that, man. You don't want to do that. It's rough. It really burns out your throat. You don't want to do it. Don't do it. But what if you had like an adjustable pressure vessel? Something like an autoclave or a vacuum vessel where you can adjust the pressure. I don't even, you might even be able to use an iron lung for this in theory, but the idea is to adjust the pressure low enough that you would rapidly extract the moisture. And then, in addition to this, you would use infrared heating lamps. So, a combination of infrared heating lamps and, yeah, lower water level. Excuse me, lower atmospheric level to suck out the water. God, my brain, I need more Sanka. Let's drink some more Sanka. Lower the atmospheric pressure, thereby forcing the water to be extracted from the plant. And you could also probably use rice as a way to collect the excess moisture. I think you could actually have like a bed of rice inside the container. So as you're slowly extracting the moisture, it has a sink. And in engineering terms, a sink merely refers to another sort of container. You can think of it as a destination for all that water vapor that you will extract. Anyways, random topic. Next topic. Yesterday we spoke about the devil. And, you know, guys, here's the deal about angels, and it does bear repeating. Angels are extraordinarily powerful in ways that humans barely understand. Like, if you can imagine a being that contains the power, or not all the power, obviously, but some of the provided-for power of God, you know, as if you could understand that, or I could, but imagine that a little bit of God's power acted in a vessel. That's kind of what an angel is. Angels are extremely powerful, and they are very smart. They're designed to be smart. But are they wise? You see, I've thought about this issue of wisdom versus intelligence for a long time. In computer science, one of the problems that people address is what's called the sorting problem. How do you rapidly sort n items, n being a variable? And, you know, in the trivial case, if you got two items, it's simple. Swap them. That's easy. And actually, the most advanced algorithms that deal with sorting actually simplify to what's called the trivial case. If you can, in a recursive function, reduce it to just swapping A and B recursively, that will sort any list. Now, keep in mind, if it's a long list, you'll need a lot of memory, because the way the quick sort works, it uses a lot of what I would call temporary paging memory. And in the context of recursive calls of functions, that can eat up your RAM really, really fast, because you don't coalesce the answer until the answer is reached. So basically, there is a really good solution to sorting. And then there's a kind of a terrible solution. It doesn't use a whole bunch of memory, but it's really, really shitty. And that's called the bubble sort. And the bubble sort is relatively simple in the sense that you continuously scan a list for one item being greater or smaller than another until all items are sorted. And that's great, but that also means that the complexity of the bubble sort, and complexity is a fun topic, complexity defining, and the definition of complexity in this case being the number of steps required to solve a problem. In fact, that's a good definition of complexity in general. Okay, complexity is defined by the number of steps required to solve a problem. For example, have you ever made bacon and eggs? Have you ever made bacon and eggs? Is bacon and eggs more or less difficult than baking a birthday cake from scratch? I would say bacon and eggs, all things being equal, is significantly simpler to prepare and cook than, you know, baking a birthday cake. The number of steps required for a birthday cake, there's more steps, there's more ingredients, there's just more steps. Bacon and eggs, not that many steps. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich, very few fucking steps. Complexity defines the number of steps required to solve a problem. If you remember nothing else in the coming weeks, months, and years about how do you fix shit, remember this. You should have only as many steps in a process as required. Adding additional steps for reasons that have nothing to do with engineering, adding additional steps because, hey, there's some weird social justice warrior philosophical position about it, that's stupid. That's BAD bad. For example, did you know that the United States for many decades has sourced defense contracts in such a way that weapon systems are built in almost every fucking state, or at least a whole bunch of states? Did you know that? Did you know that? Did you know that was done on purpose? Not because it's efficient, not because it, you know, makes any real fucking sense, but that it's done because it services a political end. That means that, among other things, a lot of complexity is injected into the process. Organizational, human complexity. That's bad. Our logistical system is incredibly complex. How you get your food is incredibly complex. How you are able to travel in an airplane from one city to another is very complex. And I will tell you this, and you need to fucking listen. In my opinion, all of the above are more complex than they need to be. Complexity is not free. Lots of people talk about debt, like, oh, I owe $500. That sucks, but that's really just, you know, that's a bacteria fart. That's nothing. The real debt you need to be worried about, the debt that really destroys you in the end, it's not the debt that has to do with credit cards. It is engineering debt. In software engineering, they call it code debt, but in reality, this type of debt exists everywhere in our modern world. And it's one thing to pay off a credit card, but how do you unwind decades of really bad ideas? Really bad urban planning, really bad civil engineering. How do you do that? How do you unwind decades of an empire with military bases everywhere? How do you unwind all the grift and all the scams and all the sideways deals? How do you unwind thousands of trillions of dollars in credit default swaps, derivatives contracts, insurance contracts, and just above the water debt? How do you do that? At this point in human history, it's a very complex thing. And the thing is, complexity is only bad, and it only gets worse. It doesn't get better unless you rationalize a process, unless you simplify it. But America's solution to complexity, all things being equal, tends to be add more complexity. For example, about a year ago, I had a conversation with an associate of mine about fracking. And I explained to them that fracking doesn't make any money. And not only that, but without the artificial money from the Federal Reserve, fracking wouldn't happen. There would be no fracking without easy money. That's reality. There would be no fracking without easy money. Please listen to what I am saying. My friend said, well, that sounds terrible. Why don't we tax it? And the solution was, let's add another level of complexity. That is not only not a solution, that is a way to destroy yourself. Yeah. So what does this have to do with the devil? Well, here's the thing about the devil and all angels, but specifically the devil. The devil's fucking smart. Smarter than me, smarter than you, smarter than probably a million humans put together. In terms of raw computing power, the devil's probably as smart as you're ever going to get. But the devil's not very wise, okay? Now, here's the deal about bubble sorts and quick sorts. And this is an abstract thought experiment, but mathematically, you can more or less prove this. Let's say I had a Commodore 64, circa 1983. 64K of memory, baby. Well, you can do a lot with that, right? Maybe do a little. And you also have one of those tape, you know those tape recorders for your external storage? Where you keep your files on a cassette tape? Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome. So imagine you have a Commodore 64 with, let's just say, an infinite number of tapes and a person that's going to be there replacing tapes and moving tapes about. And basically, you're running the bubble sort algorithm. And then in the other room, you have a Cray 2, Cray 3, Cray motherfucker supercomputer, the most advanced supercomputer that exists today. It might not even be a Cray. It might be a bunch of networked whatever. I don't really know. It could even be a quantum computer if you believe that bullshit. But the point is, imagine the other room, you have a supercomputer, but it's running the bubble sort. Okay, so in room A, you've got the Commodore 64 running the quick sort. That's smart. And it's got lots of tape. And in the other room, room B, you have a supercomputer running the bubble sort, the stupid algorithm. The algorithm with a complexity of n squared. Okay, so you know the complexity of the quick sort for n, given n items in a list, is n log n. The complexity of the bubble sort is polynomial, n squared. So if I have 10 items in a list, it takes 100 fucking steps to sort them. The average case maybe being 50, but the point is, it's fucking redonkulous. If given a random list, it takes 100 steps to sort. You know, worst case, right? Worst case. So, even though the Commodore 64 is incredibly slow compared to the supercomputer, and even though it's going to take a god-awful number of tapes for the worst-case example, there is a list so long and so random that eventually the Commodore 64 will win and the Cray will not. And the reason is simple. You get to a point with complexity that no matter how much power you have, and I don't care if you're talking power in terms of computational power or some other kind of power, it does not matter. There is no way to translate that power into effective work. In fact, another good definition of complexity is that when it gets really bad, no matter how much energy you inject into that system, that additional energy doesn't serve anything. It actually doesn't make it work. It makes things worse, actually. But you basically reach the point that no amount of energy will make things work better. And the energy's not there. And I'm talking abstractly, okay? I'm not saying energy in terms of oil or nuclear. I mean the abstract fact that you need energy to do work, to do any kind of work. So what does this have to do with the devil? Well, the devil is a powerful, powerful being, but the devil's basically running the bubble sort. The devil's basically executing a really stupid plan. And the devil's not wise. Humans are wise. In fact, I think this is one of the reasons why the devil envies humans, why the devil hates people. Because humans aren't as smart as the devil. Sometimes we're just not nearly as clever as the devil. But man, are we in general wiser than the devil. That's a gift from God. That was a gift that was given to us with our soul, this wisdom. This is a gift that comes with the Holy Spirit, the discernment and the wisdom and the way to see through the lies. The devil is the greatest liar, but he can't even escape his own deception. And that makes him angry. Thank you. I know that was a really long-winded discourse on complexity and the devil, but I would contend that the devil suffers from an inability to see through his own bullshit. And that's probably part of God's plan, too. You know, I thank God for my friend, Mike, because he and I have talked a lot about this, you know, the distinction between things that are salvation critical and things that are not. For example, the shape of the world as it exists today, in my opinion, is not, you know, salvation critical. I mean, I'm not saying it's flat. I think it is a globe. But the point is, if it were flat, I don't think that makes any difference about my relationship to God. God can make the world any way God wants to. That's part of the definition of being God. God can make the world any way God wants to. And with respect to the devil, your thoughts on the devil, because the devil is a kind of mysterious figure, and because a lot of the material about angels tends to exist in a weird space between the principal books of the Bible, or what's called canonical in reference to the Bible, and stuff that would be technically called apocrypha, like the Book of Enoch. And here's the thing. The disciples reference the Book of Enoch. They reference things that are apocryphal. So you can't really dismiss the apocryphal because the disciples didn't, and neither did Jesus. But even with all the apocrypha, and even with all the mythological understanding we have, there's a lot more mystery, for me at least, about angels than there is understanding. But here's what I'm certain of. I'm certain that the devil is powerful and the devil is intelligent. And the devil, if you were playing poker with the devil, he'd probably win. Hell, if you're playing the fiddle with the devil, he'd probably win despite, you know, a country music song, "The Devil Went Down to Georgia," right? Or something like that. But the devil is not wise. And the thing about survival in this world, in fact, I would say existence generally, is that intelligence is great and knowledge is wonderful, but wisdom is everything. And wisdom is hard to define. Wisdom perhaps could be defined by learning without dying. Because everybody learns in the end, except some people learn too late. But if we can learn without being killed, then we have a really good chance in this world before we die of gaining some wisdom. Wisdom goes a long way. I know that was a bit of a rant, which, you know, for folks that are not familiar with engineering or computer science, but I do think that you can see complexity at work. I do think people can sense it. This is part of wisdom. This is part of discernment. It's not just about the numbers. Sometimes your intuition will tell you that something is definitely wrong. I had this moment in the year 2000. It was before I, you know, really became... before I thought I would end up becoming a computer programmer. I'd just gotten out of the Army, and I was working at a company in Indianapolis, and we were extracting some really terrible data out of SAP, and I don't want to talk about SAP, it's really depressing. And I had to sort the data, so I wrote a program in Visual Basic in Excel to sort a list, and it was horrible. I didn't even know I'd done it. I ended up basically just accidentally, intuitively creating the stupidest sort you ever do, and that's the bubble sort. And I was actually sorting items in the spreadsheet, and I ran the sort. And I had a friend of mine looking at it as it was doing this, because it wasn't just that I was doing a bubble sort. My memory for doing the sort, for doing the swapping, was actually in the spreadsheet itself. So as it did the bubble sort, the spreadsheet would flicker, and it was really terrible. I could tell by looking at it, it was doing it the wrong way. I just didn't know why. I didn't know enough yet. And as I learned more, and I did go back to school, I learned why. I understood why. I knew it was also about the math. But I know that I have friends and family that, you know, go to work every day, and they go to meetings, and they can sense when some problem is being solved with too many resources. That is complexity. And you know, complexity isn't always terrible if you have excess resources. But actually, I should rephrase that. Complexity is always terrible. It's just that when you have excess resources, you don't notice it at first. Complexity is always bad. I should have rephrased that. It is always bad. But when you're rich with resources, when you, you know, for example, 100 years ago, the cost of pulling one barrel of oil could get you basically 100 barrels of oil, more or less. So the cost of 100 barrels of oil pulled out of the ground was one barrel of oil, which, you know, isn't so bad. Today, it's like one barrel of oil maybe gets you two in the good situations. And things like fracking, or worse yet, tar sands, from a technical energy perspective, when you think about all the natural gas that's used in the tar sands to boil the tar sands, to turn it into something that remotely resembles oil, technically you're putting more energy in than you get out. I joked several years ago with people that this is how the Nazis were making oil at the end of the fucking war. That's tar sands, okay? Without a lot of fucking hinky-dinky financial bullshit, tar sands doesn't happen. It doesn't. Without a lot of make-believe money, it would never happen, because it makes no fucking sense, except for, you know, in the world of infinite debt, it does until it doesn't. It works until it doesn't, right? It works until it doesn't. That's the thing about complexity, too. The more complex it is, it also means it's going to fail in unpredictable ways. So everything can seem fine until it's not. And at that point in time, usually the failure, not always, but usually if it's a badly designed system, and I kind of think our modern neo-Stalinist economic system is really terribly designed, too much complexity, I think in that case, the effects are very unpredictable and can be terrible. I think that when we start seeing major food shortages, this will become obvious. We haven't seen them yet everywhere. We haven't seen them yet in America mostly, but it's coming. And it's also, in my opinion, in part, not total, but in part due to complexity. In my humble opinion, most of the calories that you eat historically should come from about 50 miles away or less. Did you fucking hear what I just said? Most of the food you eat, if you want to live in a world that is sustainable and reasonable and not too complex, should come from within 50 miles. But in the magical world we've been in for the last 100 years, we ship food everywhere. We'll ship food to China, frozen, and it'll come back to us again. Who the fuck does that? Who ships raw material food across the world and then has it turned into something else and then ships it back again? This is what you can do when energy is relatively cheap. But that's, you know, that's hiding some things. That's hiding really terrible decisions. Once that energy is no longer cheap, you start to reveal the truth underneath, the real debt. And it's not the bonds or the insurance contracts or the derivatives. The real debt is the 100 years of really terrible fucking engineering, both in terms of the physical engineering of the world and the social engineering. And when that unwinds, it's not going to be pretty, folks. I'm sorry. Sorry for getting all serious about the devil and about complexity. Next topic. So I was thinking about the book of Job, because I read the introduction of the book of Job yesterday as part of the service to talk about the devil. And I was thinking about the book of Job, and it's hard. It's a hard book for a Christian to read, because if you read it the wrong way, it seems like the devil is objectifying a human being, excuse me, that God is objectifying a human being and allowing the devil to do whatever the devil wants to as a test, as almost like it's an experiment. And of course, Job belongs in the portion of the Bible that's called the wisdom text. So no one that I know has ever said to me, Dan, there was a Job. Job probably didn't exist. Job was part of a wisdom story. But even as a wisdom story, who wants to believe that God, my Lord, my Savior, would torment a soul almost in essence to win a bet with the devil? And the devil is an angel, which means he's smaller than God. Who does that? It's hard to look at Job, but you need to look at Job a different way. And maybe a good way to approach Job is to look at another wisdom text, and that's Ecclesiastes. And I don't mean just the portion about a time for this and a time for that. That's actually one of the more optimistic parts, or nicer parts, or not so dark parts of Ecclesiastes. But read Ecclesiastes, then read Job, and then think about this. What do you take with you when you die? What do you take with you? Do you take your car, your Tesla? If you have a Tesla, do you get that in heaven? If you have a private jet, do you take that up there when you die? You know, they say the pharaohs buried themselves with their own cats and all their loot. Why'd they have to kill the cat, though? That's what they say. They say the pharaohs buried themselves with slaves and cats and gold and silver. None of that went with them to the other world. None of that's available. You know, I was watching those stupid Scientology, I should say not stupid, I was watching this documentary series on Scientology, which is a stupid cult, amongst other things. I think it's also an MKUltra project. I can't prove it, but my intuition tells me that it's a deep state mindfuck as well. But that being said, did you know that after L. Ron Hubbard died, that they maintained multiple homes for him when he returns? Okay, that weird South Park episode from, you know what, more than 10 years ago, I think about 10 years ago, where basically, you know, they're dealing with Scientology and that kind of crap, that relates to the idea that he had a 21-year absence, basically. Like, he was able to be on leave for 21 years from the Sea Org. He had a billion-year contract, he was given leave for 21 years, and then he would report back in some new body, right? So there are homes maintained all around the world for L. Ron Hubbard. They expect him to return. He's not returning, folks. Ron Hubbard's not returning, folks. He is in hell with Hitler and Stalin and Mao Zedong. L. Ron Hubbard is not coming back. But yeah, we all die. The body wastes away. All the shit you pile up, all the money you make. And I'm not saying you shouldn't work hard or build wealth. That is not the message. That is not the message. Job is restored at the end of the book of Job. He is restored with property and wives and family and everything else. So the message is not that wealth is bad. The simple message is there are things that matter and there are things that do not. Think about the devil tempting Jesus. I truly think the devil believed that if he said to Jesus, look at the leaders, look at the kings, look at the emperors, I can allow you to rule over all of them. I think the devil actually believed that would be an attractive deal to Jesus. But God, through Jesus, sees all of history. And all that he saw was dust. The devil couldn't see that. The devil couldn't see that he was offering Jesus dust. So tell me again, is it better to be smart or wise? So the story of Job is hard. But one of the messages is, you know what? We have stuff, we lose stuff. We have jobs, we lose jobs. And you know what? Sometimes we're married and sometimes we get divorced. And sometimes our children, I don't have any, but sometimes our children turn on us. And sometimes our children come home. And sometimes our parents are jerks and sometimes they're not. And all of this is meaningless. And if you think that's my words, no. That's basically a paraphrase of a significant portion of Ecclesiastes. Jobs, money, gold, diamonds, the wealth of the world, to be king, to be emperor, to be senator, to have a PhD, to be a professor, all of this goes away. All of it. But the soul that God gave you, the choices that God gave you, the memories that God allowed you to gain in this life, the beauty, the love, the having the Tesla, the being in a home. You see the distinction here. For the devil, a home is a building. But for a person, a home is a family and more. The devil sees the building and counts the people. But God knows the number is greater. So yeah, in the story of Job, everything gets taken away and everyone turns on him. And his life becomes terrible. And yes, he's restored at the end. But the lesson is not that God has your back. God does have your back, but that's not the lesson. The lesson is all this stuff, which is great, like this keyboard in front of me, which I can't even play properly, all this stuff, the digital recorder, the computer, the chair, the volcano to heat my marijuana, the coffee maker to make my Sanka, all of this will go away and turn to dust, all of it. But there are things that matter. There are things that cannot be taken away. The fact that you were in this world and you touch people's lives, no one can take that away. Not the devil, not even God. That's also part of free will. It isn't simply that you have choices, but your choices would be meaningless if they had no impact. You want to know what doesn't go away? The love you have for a child. You're going to die one day, but if you're a parent and you were as good a parent can be, 2020, right? 2020. If you're a parent, a mom or a dad, one day you will die. And the truth is, one day your children will die too. But in their life, they will have memories of you. They will have things that you taught them, wisdom that you learned that you gave to them so they didn't have to learn it by basically almost dying. There are things that go away and there are things that do not. There are things that matter and there are things that are of no matter. And the fact that the devil doesn't know the difference is kind of funny. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I'm not afraid of the devil. Not that I don't think the devil's powerful. The devil could smite me in an instant. The devil could probably convince 100 people to take me someplace and torture me. Given my age and health conditions, I would go into shock in a matter of minutes unless they had some sort of special forces dude there and extra, you know, internal organs. Unlikely. The devil can do a lot of things to us. Torture, kill, murder, lie to us, make us deals that are very tempting. But the devil doesn't know the difference between a building and a home. It's almost sad. The devil will never have the capacity to know the difference between lust and love. The devil will never understand the difference between reading a book and understanding a book. Thank you. Now, and I'll also say this too. The Bible is filled with meaning. So just because there's a particular meaning that I'm extracting from the story of Job does not mean that that's the only theme or the only lesson you can extract from Job. There are many other lessons you can extract. But I think one of them is, you know what? Know what's important. Know the difference between what's important and not, and do the best you can. But no matter how good you are, no matter how smart you are, even wise you are, life is hard. People die. Sometimes we're rich and sometimes we're poor. Sometimes there are people who are rich their whole life, and sometimes there are people who are poor their whole life. And I would contend that being either rich or poor probably has nothing to do with happiness. Some people find great happiness in this life, and some people find very little. Okay, that's the reality of things. There are things that last and things that don't. Next topic. Next topic, sort of related. Actually, it has to do with dualism. I don't know. You know, it's funny. I am basically a dualist, and in philosophical terms, to simplify what a dualist is, dualism in philosophical terms means that for all the stuff in the universe that we see, there is this other side, which is the unseen, or maybe even you could call it the spiritual side. So, for example, there is matter and energy, and I think of myself as being reasonably scientific-minded in terms of applying the scientific method. I said scientific method. I didn't say scientism or Scientology, which at this point is almost the same thing. No, there is a scientific method. There is a method by which we can understand the world, and that is one way in which I engage with the world. And that's how I engaged with the world pretty much my whole life until my late 30s. And a few things happened, and I started seeing things a little differently. And then there's this other side of the world, and it's not the part of the world that you can easily approach scientifically. And you can call it the spiritual side. You can call it the supernatural. I know there are people who want to call it the supernatural, but the point is there's this other side. And these two sides are sometimes connected and sometimes not. That's how I see it. But a big part of disconnecting the spiritual from the stuff around us, I think it does have to do with evil. I think one of the goals of evil is to cut the connection between the spiritual side of things. So anyways, I don't want to go too deep into that because I kind of beat a dead angel. Oh boy, I shouldn't have said that. I beat a dead horse. Enough. So, boy, this next note is from this morning and it's kind of heavy and I didn't want to load people down, but man. So, yeah. I was having tacos with a friend of mine a little more than a year ago. And I basically said to this friend, I wasn't sure what was coming, but I was pretty certain that the normal world, the sort of normal world people were used to at this point, was going away. This was late 2019. This was before I heard anything about, you know, the COVID crap. This was far before that. Event 201, all these things I didn't even know about or think about. This was basically September of 2019. And it was just a basic intuition. And one of the things I said was, we're going to live in a time where Christians will be driven underground. I stick to that. I'm not saying we're in the end times. There have been many times in human history where Christians and people of the Hebrew faith, the Jewish faith, where Jewish people and Christians have been persecuted. This is not a new story. This is an old story. In fact, there have been significant periods of the last 2,000 years where Christians persecuted each other. So just because I'm saying that I believe we're going to face a lot of Christian persecution does not imply that we're in the end times. But I do think it means we got to make a choice. I can understand the argument, and this is a solid argument, and the argument that is made, I am a parent, I am in a relationship, I have responsibilities to more people than just myself, So I have to choose the lesser of two evils. I have to make utilitarian decisions. I'm doing a little bit of bad to do a lot of good. I get it. Evil by inches. That's what that is. Evil by inches. I'll do a little bit of bad. I'll touch a little bit of the unclean thing, but it's because I have kids and a family. I get it. I get it. For decades of the last century, especially, Americans have been doing shit like that. And they have been fed a lot of bullshit. In fairness, they've been fed a lot of bullshit. They've been treated like mushrooms, kept in the dark, fed shit. So if you're a product of public education, you've been told that you didn't have any other choice. You had to go along or get along. Be like everybody else. Don't be, you know, the person that disturbs or rocks the boat. Stay on the fucking Titanic. You know, it's great. It's fancy. I get it. I understand, even though I don't have kids, even though I basically live like a hobo, I understand the desire to want to keep things the way they are. And I also understand that if you have a family, if you have young children, I get the desire to want to just work within the system as much as possible for as long as possible. I understand. And here's the problem. If you're a Christian, that time is coming to an end. That's very, very, the event horizon of your being given your choice is coming to an end. I don't know who's winning the election. I don't think anybody knows other than the people that run this country. I don't believe the election ever worked. It never worked in my whole lifetime. If you voted, you did so and it had no impact. It was never going to work. But this is the first election, maybe, as my friend Jim pointed out, where they took off the dress and showed you what was underneath on purpose. On purpose, they showed you the corruption. On purpose, they showed you all of the ridiculous stunts to push an agenda, to push an outcome in what was supposed to be a free and fair election. What a fucking joke. The reality is, even Bernie Sanders is in on the joke. The last election, he got rewarded. I think people in the Democratic Party gave him a house on Fire Island or something. So, yeah, folks, if you think Bernie Sanders was the guy on the outside, that was part of the movie. That was part of the story. You were supposed to believe in that character, and a lot of you did. You put the stickers on your cars, just like the last time. You learned nothing. You learned nothing, folks. Time is coming. Time is coming. Time is up. I get it. Evil by inches. If I had successfully stayed married or had married someone and had kids, and I was in my, you know, if I was 50 years old today and I had kids in high school or in college, I would probably be in the same place as most of you. I'm not special. I'm not super strong morally. I'm probably like a lot of you. All I'm saying is the strategy of getting by evil by inches is coming to an end. They're not going to knock on your door and say, would you like to have the vaccine? They're going to have a National Guard soldier there with their weapon at ready saying, take the fucking vaccine. They're not going to give you a choice at work saying, would you like to be tested with one of these incredibly stupid, faulty, false positive generating George Orwell test. No, they're going to give you the COVID test whether you like it or not. And they might even give you that brutally disgusting shove a plastic fucking thingy up your nose and potentially puncture the barrier between your brain and your nose. They're not going to give you a choice. You'll do it or you won't have a job. You'll do it or you won't get food. Now, if you're a Christian like me, you've already made your choice because that's part of being a Christian. But there are a lot of people who call themselves Christians, and when they're given that choice, they're going to choose to do it because they'll think this is also just evil by inches. It's not. Okay, Bill Gates is a mass murderer. Bill Gates, if we lived in a world that had any sense of justice and law, Bill Gates would be classified as a terrorist and he would be arrested or shot and put in fucking jail after some kind of a trial but I certainly wouldn't give him much more of a trial than the people than the Branch Davidians got at Waco in 93. I think they got no trial. That's about as much of a trial as I think that fucker deserves. But the fact is, if we had rule of law, Bill Gates would be in jail. He's a mass poisoner. He's a killer. If you think the evil by inches routine is going to continue to work, if we end up in what I call that statesman-like speech scenario of hyperstatism, if we end up with troops going to people's homes and forcing vaccinations for a pandemic, I live in Chinatown, I can't even see. A pandemic that doesn't stop communists from going around tipping over garbage cans and acting like douchebags? That's a really strange fucking pandemic. A pandemic where nurses spend time making TikTok videos and I see no phlegm, no blood, no viscera, no anything. In a pandemic, people would be vomiting. They'd be bleeding out. You wouldn't have time to do a dancing nurse's routine and your uniforms would be covered in disgusting shit. That's a pandemic. What we're going through right now is called a lie. And yeah, people are being killed. They are. People are dying. But it's not because of a pandemic that doesn't exist. If you think evil by inches is going to work any longer, you have run out of rope. And the only thing I can suggest is, if you're a Christian, remember that. And make the choice that you need to make, because you will not be protecting your family by taking that vaccination. You will not be protecting your family by allowing your children to take that fucking vaccination. It's just the opposite. You'll be killing them, in my opinion. And if not killing them directly and immediately, over time. And maybe your kids will be the lucky ones. Because keep in mind, Bill Gates said 10 to 15%. So I guess you could be the lucky 85% that don't get wiped out in the first tranche of vaccination. Evil by inches is over. The utilitarian decision, the lesser of two evils, it's over. It was probably over the day I was born, but it is over now. They will not give you a choice. There won't be a lesser evil. They will shove total evil in your face, and you'll have a choice to obey or die. But I've said this before, and it's something we should think about. I would rather die and be free with my Lord Jesus than be a slave to the devil in hell. That's the choice you have. That's the real quote. It isn't about being free in hell. In hell, you'll be a slave and be tortured. The devil doesn't like you if you're a human being. Some of you Satan worshipers out there, you're cucks, man. You're being so fooled, it's not even, well, it is funny, but it's sad. You can choose to be a slave to the devil and have your soul destroyed. Or you can walk free with the Lord and recognize that your body was always just, you know, a loaner. Your body was always just a rental car. That's what it was. Your body was never you, and you are not your body. You are your spirit, your soul. Your body is wonderful. And God gave us so many beautiful things. But remember the curses as Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden. All of this turns to dust. All of it. The pianos, the buildings, all of it turns to dust. Empires fall. And even though the devil may not understand this, if you're a Christian and you can think about it, you can understand it. And then you can make the right choice, because it's the only rational choice. What they're offering you is nothing but damnation. That's all they're offering you at this point. They're offering you a faster trip to hell. And what I would suggest is that you don't do that. That at this point, you give up on evil by inches. I was going to go over my notes from yesterday. Maybe I should. I don't have many. President Tamarkio, blah, blah, blah. A friend of mine sent me an article about the election, how there could be some legal, you know, babloigan that could be applied by the Trump, you know, legal team to win. I don't know. The narrative could go that way. But I will say this, though. Whether it ends up being Trump or Biden, I think there is a scenario whereby, you know, the hyperstatism, the extreme government statism gets worse, and something to think about. And the rest of this, oh, I don't want to talk about that. You know what? I think I'm done for tonight. I'll leave a link to the notes from yesterday, but they're really not that relevant. I do have some readings from the Bible. You know what? I may just do this separately tomorrow. I'll talk about yesterday tomorrow, which will make it 2 days ago. I'll talk about tomorrow, next Thursday, after I go backwards in time to last week. Have a great one. You hang out, you be cool, and just keep your eyes on the ball. Remember what's important. There's stuff that's important and there's stuff that's probably not. Someone I care about, I told this person a few years ago, I said there will come a time when the stuff that people think is valuable today will become worthless. And the stuff that people think is worthless today will become basically worth its weight in gold, priceless. You know, in the other world, in the world that is coming to an end, people would poo-poo family, poo-poo actual familiar relationships, poo-poo ordinary community that doesn't involve Facebook or Twitter or Fuckster or any of that other shit. They would poo-poo actual human relationships. And we are still in the extreme version of that, which means that we're not in the new world quite yet. We're still in the version of the world where we're going to convince people that actual human relationships are crap. What I'm telling you is that actual human relationships at this point in history are worth their weight in gold, if you could measure such a thing. That actual people, family, real connections, this is priceless. Please remember this in the days and weeks ahead. And don't let the people who run the newspapers tell you who to love and who to hate. Okay? Don't let Twitter or Facebook tell you who to love or who to hate. Don't let the internet tell you who to love and who to hate. Use your discernment and do the best you can, but ultimately, real human relationships involve things like hugs and handshakes. So you guys have a good one.